Hey, it's Sean Halter, the host of the CMO Suite, and I want to thank you all again for listening to season one, and I'm incredibly excited about all of you that will be joining us for season two. We had an amazing season last year, and for this year, we're adding a video to try to make things even more interesting. We're going to kick things off with a little bit of a look back episode. We're going to be sitting with one of our favorite guests from last year. We're going to talk to him a little bit more in depth about some of the things that we didn't get a chance to talk to him about last year. We're going to play some of our favorite clips from season one, and we're even going to give you a little sneak preview of some of the guests coming up on season two. So sit back, relax. If you've missed any of the episodes in season one, make sure you go back and listen to those. And please join us all for season two of the CMO Suite. This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategy, specializing in micro-targeted full funnel media strategy for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com, and I promised I would give a shout out to my buddies over at Tumi. Tumi product quality and selection are key attributes that have made Tumi the leading international business accessory and travel lifestyle brand. And finally, we want to thank No Kid Hungry for being part of our show. We're very proud to make a contribution in the name of each and every one of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation will help us provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritional meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. For more information, visit them at nokidhungry.org. And Holly, let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Thank you and welcome to the show. It is the CMO Suite. We're doing this live in Los Angeles. I am your host, Sean Halter. Producing with me today is my good friend, Holly Payberg. Holly, how are you?
Hi, I'm great.
Thank you for joining us. I've already created mass technical difficulties, and I'm super excited because we are out here with my... can I call you a friend almost at this point?
I hope so. What else would you call me?
Jay Goodman.
Jay is CEO of Observatory Agency, and he's going to help us recap season one.
Did you bring show notes?
I did, and they're downstairs
in my
office.
Yeah, listen, you don't need notes. You're you, and you can talk from the heart without notes. I promise I'll protect you, too. I'll even pot up who... sorry, there's a hot mic move right there as I moved my mic around.
You know, honestly, let's talk about season one, episode one, because while I was taken by a lot of them, Casey and Chad were just like, that was a really interesting combo. The reason I wanted to grab my notes is I'm going to now forget who said what misattribute things, but Quicken, Rocket Mortgage...
And Crunch.
Crunch, right. But which one's Casey? Which one's Chad?
Chad is from Crunch and Casey is from Quicken.
Well, let's pull up a clip from that episode and take a quick listen.
Scott with us, joining us today. It's Casey Herbis, CMO for Quicken Loans. Casey, thank you so much for joining us today. You were in the automotive side for quite some time. Do you mind spending just a minute kind of telling us about your time working for Fiat?
Yeah, sure. So I was born and raised in Metro Detroit. And after graduating from Michigan State, I started working at Chrysler's ad agency and had a wonderful 17-year career there supporting Chrysler with BBDO. And then I had the chance to join Chrysler, now FCA, when the Italians and the Fiat came over and took ownership of Chrysler, now Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. And I spent 7 years there. I was the marketing director for the Fiat brand. So over the course of 7 years there, we bought 5 vehicles to marketplace, did a few Super Bowl campaigns, and had a great time building the brand and dealer network. And 16 months ago, I got the pleasure of being asked to come over and serve as the chief marketing officer at Quicken Loans in beautiful downtown Detroit.
Okay, so Casey immediately got personal and says, hey, I'm a kid from Detroit. I'm proud to be part of the Detroit community. I grew up in the auto business. Yep. Now I've got Quicken and Rocket Mortgage. It's so rare, whether in a podcast setting or in people's LinkedIn profiles or whatever it is, that people don't get personal there. They don't tell the human story that led them to their professional story. And I love that he was so willing to share that.
So with us on the phone right now is Chad Waitzig, Executive Vice President of Marketing and Branding for Crunch Gyms. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Chad, actually, there's going to be 4 questions. Are you familiar with the term C-suite?
I am familiar with the term C-suite.
DJ constantly ribs me about the fact that there's a word for executive professionals, and it's called the C-suite. And then he's probably going to say, well, is there a C in his title? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's mockery.
So, okay, fine. So
there is a C in the word executive.
C? There we go. C-suite? when we brought Chad on that first episode, we didn't know what we were going to call the show. We didn't know what the show was going to be. And so I think we recorded him maybe two or three times before we finally fell into a little bit of a rhythm. But again, to your point, you know, then I reach out to the guy over at Quicken Loans, and just right off the bat, I mean, he's just such a great, cool, personable speaker when you really think about it.
Agreed. Yeah.
That was one of the episodes that you really liked. And there were plenty of other episodes that I felt like I really took something from. We're really excited. We actually have our guest in studio today. It is Dana Paris, the CMO of SkinFix. So last question here for us, Dana. Talk to us about what do you feel like you still need to learn? What are the areas that you feel like, gosh, I wish I knew more, or I wish I had more time to kind of...
Cryptocurrency.
Cryptocurrency.
That's where...
Really?
Yeah. I wish that I understood cryptocurrency
from a blockchain perspective, because blockchain can impact marketing to some extent because of the one-on-one element of it.
A little bit of everything.
Or you're thinking you're just trading in cryptocurrency and just forgetting the whole marketing job altogether.
No. I believe that promotions, GWPs, different ways to animate your business could be done through cryptocurrency blockchains in the future. And I would love to be on the cutting edge of that and really understand that deeper. And I think we're going to have to learn it pretty quickly.
One of the things that we talked again a little bit off mic about a little bit was just the fact that sometimes you can reach out to people that maybe you've reached out to them 10 or 15 times. And they don't know that you reach out to them 10 or 15 times because they get reached out to so many times. But maybe sometimes it's just that one right idea, or it's that one situation, or back to your point, maybe if you can find the dynamic of not selling, but helping solve something or providing them something of value, it's so much easier.
God forbid we should solve problems.
Yeah. With us today, we've got a great guest. We've got Brian King. Brian is with Owens Corning. And Brian, I feel like I've been cyber stalking you for maybe 10 or 15 years. Where were you just before you were over at Owens? Somewhere in Ohio, I feel like.
Oh, I'm still in Ohio, but I was with Black & Decker.
That's right, it was Black & Decker. Stanley Steamer.
Yeah, well, I've been with Stanley Steamer, and I've been with Stanley Black & Decker. I seem to like companies that have Stanley
in their name. Let's start with Stanley in there. Well, listen, we thank you again so much for joining us on the show. You've lived in Ohio, and I know you've moved around a tiny bit. Tell us about how you took the job at Owens, and really what you feel like has changed since you took that direction.
Sure. Yeah, I've moved around a bit. I mean, I grew up in Canada, so I speak funny. So there's people will probably
no shame
that.
In that, my friend.
Yeah, I know. It's good. I was born in the UK, so
oh,
I
wow.
was part of a corporate. I was part of a corporate relocation when my dad moved us to Canada when I was a young person, and then I've done the same thing to my kids as well too. So. Journey to Owens Corning really took me back to 2009. I don't know if you remember what was going on in 2009, but there was a little bit of turmoil.
Couple things, little blip in the economy, from what I remember.
And I was in automotive at the time, so selling big shiny pieces of steel to guys in the back of auto dealerships, and well, that didn't really work out at the time. So there was a typical headhunter call, and ended up at Owens Corning. Thought building materials was something that was definitely going to be on the upswing, and. It certainly has happened. I mean, the 2009 to now, I mean, the depths of the housing crisis, 2009, but Owens Corning's a pretty good company from a perseverance perspective. We got good financials, and so we were able to ride through that, and then now things are completely different.
This has been a little bit, I don't want to say an angle for us, but it is at least an opportunity to talk to people like Joanne Harold, who's the CMO for Honey Baked Hams, who literally I've probably sent 50 things to since I started in this industry 10 years ago, because I actually almost feel like I have a good personal relationship with her now. I am your host, Sean Halter. We are super excited today. Joanne Harold, I apologize. I know we've been trying to catch you for a little while now. We missed you the first time. You missed us the second time. Whatever it was, you're here with us today.
Sounds great. Excited to be here.
Well, thank you again. And again, sorry for asking you to jump through a few hoops to get us here today, but we appreciate it. And we are super excited to have you on with us today. We've built out a special episode just for you in some ways. It's our Thanksgiving episode. You came home, right?
Correct. And it's funny. I was gone for 8 years, and literally 8 years to the day that I left is the day that I came back to Honey Bake. So it was very serendipitous and, again, a brand I love so much. So very happy to be back at Honeybaked.
Now, you talked a lot about digital, but at the same time, what are the other areas that you feel like you guys are continuing to spend time in the space? Is traditional TV still a part of the mix?
Yeah, it is. And Honeybaked is such a visual product. It's such a emotional product. And so when I came back, we launched our first television campaign in over 10 years. And that was driven mostly by our franchisees who really wanted us to get out and tell the Honeybaked story. So the franchisees rallied around us running a television campaign, helped put money into the campaign, and it really was a movement.
You know, now she's engaging on my LinkedIn profile. I mean, she's doing all those kinds of things. So how do you find that niche in your business, Jay?
It's a great question, and there are a lot of answers to it. But as you were talking about solving problems, I actually had a flashback to a memory that's almost 25 years old.
So when you were a child, a very, very small child.
Yeah, when I was a child working at Wieden & Kennedy, I was in a meeting with one of the great creative directors to come out of there, Michael Preve. At the time, his partner was Bob Moore. They'd come back from opening Wieden & Kennedy Amsterdam. We were working on the Microsoft account together when Wieden at that point was really proving itself beyond Nike. So we're in a meeting at Microsoft, and we're presenting a campaign, as one does. Yep. And the client asks, as Microsoft people do, a challenging question. And before Michael could answer the question, the account person, an account person in the room, very politely but very directly said, you have to understand you're talking to artists here.
Sure.
Because the comment was about the way something looked, I imagine. And Michael Preve, who is as artistic as anybody, stopped, full stop, stopped his colleague and said, no, we're not. We're not artists. We're solution providers.
Really?
And that, so I've written this, I think I wrote it in an Adweek piece a few years ago, in like the Things I've Learned article or something like that. And one of those kind of irrefutable laws of the way Observatory moves through the industry, but the way I try to operate as first a creative, then a creative director, and now a CEO, is sure, we use creativity, but we use it for one thing only, to sell more stuff. Whatever it is our clients are selling, it's our job to sell it. There are challenges, and we're here to solve them.
Did you feel like his point in saying that was to still respect the fact that there's an artistry element behind it, but that can't be a barrier? It should simply be part of the conduit of, again, solving a problem. And if that problem is how to sell more of whatever it is, that was the deep part of his point. I mean, it resonated with
you. The deep part of his point was if you want to make art for art's sake, go be a fine artist. Yeah. We're sitting at Microsoft. We're here to sell software. And he didn't want to be defended on the basis of fact that he wasn't a business person. By the way, I'm speaking for him. I would imagine he'd agree with this. We're still great friends. But Michael Preve wanted to say right then and there to a very important client, I'm only in this room to help you sell software.
So he's still a friend?
Absolutely.
So great. When the show's over, you can send him a text, let him know that you talked about him on the show. And of course, if he wants to come back and rebut that, we'll always...
You should talk to Michael Preve, one of the greats.
We'll add another episode on the season. One of the things I want to make sure that we ask you today is a couple of things just about marketing itself. And so is there a specific marketing channel that you feel like either you personally can't live without, or that Observatory needs to make sure that they're spending more time understanding so, again, they can help solve those problems for clients that are seeking you out?
Well, we're constantly evaluating as both consumers of media, meaning human beings, and as marketers, we are constantly evaluating all forms of media. So it's a very common, you know, hallway, open space conversation. Did you see X? And it's not the content, it's the way the content was delivered. Even though we are not a media agency, we don't plan or place media, we are hyper aware of the media environment. The work we do creates content that has to live in multiple forms of media all the time. We don't present to a media plan the way ad agencies tend to service a media plan. We do the opposite. We lead with insight and strategy, a creative platform, and only then do we ask our clients to start bringing media into it, because we want to be idea-driven, not media deal-driven.
Whether they're in Los Angeles or they're in New York or Chicago, or if they're not in some of those markets, what's a piece of advice that you feel like you could give to somebody who's either already has an agency, it's in the creative space a little bit, or they're trying to build their agency, or they're just trying to navigate through how do I get more business? Fair question?
Yeah, big question, and I don't want to give away our secret sauce.
No, of course not. No, I've never asked.
There is none. No, the look, I think we have a lot of differentiators. We built this thing inside CAA for a dozen years for a reason. We talked about that a lot last time. But if we learned anything inside CAA, it was collaboration. It was that as collaborative as every agency loves to say they are, that company is collaboration as culture. And the rules associated with that, return all your phone calls every day, return your colleagues' phone calls first. If a favor is asked of you by a colleague, stop what you're doing, help them, because to help them is to help another agency client. And so what we've done is now we do that at scale, well beyond CAA. Of course, CAA still is an owner and exclusive partner of ours, but as we're out in the world, we always assume that the person we're calling wants to collaborate with us. Somebody, there are so many shades now of competition, of co-opetition, whatever it is. We assume even if someone's
Don't jump
going,
off that word. You called it co-opetition?
Yeah.
Go back to that for just a second. So what does that mean?
It's this word that seems to have come about, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, where as media was collapsing, media outlets now also have creative agencies.
Sure. So
right?
agencies are media companies, media companies are agencies.
So theoretically that's competition. Or is it or is it not? Well, so I think I posted about this on LinkedIn today, so all four of my followers
I only missed it because I was up here setting up.
It was a doozy, let me tell you. But Turner just announced that they have their own branded content studio today. Right? So the first alarm that went off in my head was, forgive my language, oh shit, more competition. Within 1 second, my reaction was, oh, wait a second. This is validation that what we've been saying about moving away from interruptive advertising and toward content that attracts and engages an audience. This is validation because one of the most important distributors of content in the world, Turner, beyond courageous at CNN, is now going all in across the network. To do the thing we've been asking our client brands to do for a decade, so it became validation. I reached out to them immediately and said, I just want you to know we love this. How can we work together? Yeah. Do we have shared clients? Of course we do. Our clients advertise across the Turner network. Turner itself is a client, asterisk. He has now disclosed that. I was excited for them regardless of our client relationship. I'm excited for the fact that the market's moving in the direction we've been betting on.
It is.
You asked for advice and I gave you something else, but
no,
collaboration.
But think of, again, I think the piece that I would take away from that a little bit, Jay, is the fact that, again, it's all coming into a giant bowl of soup, right? We're all trying to find a space. We're all trying to figure out who's got the relationship. We're all trying to ultimately help a client. And I think most clients are going to get to a point where they realize who's really there to help them and who's there to sell them, right?
We do, you know, I'm glad you said that.
I don't say much smart, but maybe
you say a lot, and thank you for it. It seems to me there used to be a quote-unquote advertising community, that groups of executives who arguably competed against each other in the marketplace for employees, obviously for clients, could call it a day at X o'clock, meet each other at the bar, and it didn't matter if you worked at Ogilvy or McCann or Burnett, you were colleagues in an industry. Somehow that fell away. Maybe it fell away through geography, maybe it fell away because the industry is a little bit harder than it used to be. I don't know, I wasn't there. But we would very much like our collaborative approach to the business to bring back some of that community.
Do you think it can?
Yeah, I'll announce it here. We're starting something. Look, you know, John and Glenn at 72 and Sunny are great friends. We've worked together at Wieden & Kennedy 20 plus years ago. Right? They're right down the street. We email occasionally. We occasionally get together for a drink. There are lots of others like that. Sure. Los Angeles has a great quote-unquote marketing community, entertainment and marketing community. We don't hang out. So we're actually going to start getting a standing table once a month, different restaurant. We'll send it out to 50 or 100 people. If 100 people want to come, we'll expand the table to 100. If 5 people want to come, it's a start. And we're going to try to force some community back in. It's tough. We're not all in Manhattan. We can't just all walk out of the building and meet at the corner bar. But it's probably worth the 1 hour drive for this community of like-minded marketers who've established ourselves in this city with a global footprint to start spending time together.
Well, I think back to that point, there's enough business that's out there, right? And so if you're willing to extend a hand, if you're willing to say, look, let's work a little bit collaboratively here. It also feels like, to some extent, we're all still learning what this new world is going to look like. And whether you're 25 and you're just starting out, you don't know any better, or you're 45 or older, there's plenty of people that are raising a hand to say, I'm not done. I'm not done yet. And I'm willing to kind of jump into this process and see kind of what that process brings to us. And so, again, whether that's coming up with something on your own or coming up with something collaboratively, there's no rule book anymore to some extent. Would you agree?
There's absolutely no rule book anymore. We had one of the world's largest media agencies in here just yesterday. It doesn't matter which one, pitching us on collaborating with them. Well, we have our majority ownership in Stagwell.
Sure.
Stagwell doesn't have a whole lot of media planning and placement right now, but they could. And so I kind of opened with that and said, hey, you sure? And they said, absolutely, we love your work. It doesn't matter who owns you.
Yeah.
What matters is that we could do great work for our clients together. That would normally be my pitch to them, because they have something that I would love for Observatory and Observatory clients to take advantage of, which is their media weight in the marketplace. But they were here because they recognized that our ideas can help them, I guess, plan and place their media better.
You know, again, for us to kick off season two, to be able to come here, to be able to not only sit with you, but to be able to sit with some of your friends, you were kind enough again to make a couple of introductions for us, which is
pleasure.
It's always helpful for us. You know, part of this process again is that there's no rule book, and even though most of the companies that we invest in are not based in New York or they're not based in Los Angeles, they may have some footprints there. They may have a footprint in Austin or some other markets. The rule book for us is, let's just throw it out. Let's just figure out who's out there. Let's figure out if we're making wise investments in companies, and can they go out and do good work. Ultimately, the work is what allows you to figure it out. And as we wrapped season one, as we came out here for season two, we were excited to come and use your space. And so,
you know, with regard to rulebook, if I give a shout out, I guess it would be called, to a client, a global, you know, tied for first largest marketer in the world who's doing a great job of throwing out the rulebook, it's AB InBev. So AB InBev is known for ruthless efficiency, right? In a really good way, right?
Yeah.
They are engineers and economists who are in the beer business, right? So ruthless
competitive
efficiency,
as it gets right? Now. Yep.
And one of the things they've recognized is that the old school marketing book, television advertising, but they're seeing diminishing returns. They're seeing diminishing returns in digital. They're economists and engineers. So what do they do with diminishing returns? They look for new things to do.
Yeah.
And what they do is they'll bring us in at a global level and lots of their other great partners to pitch a platform, to pitch an idea, to pitch an approach, and if they like it, they open it up to all of their brands globally and say, what about this? So we pitched them one thing. I won't go into what it is.
Sure.
We piloted it in Argentina. Beer sales up 18% at retail, 30% at bars. China picks it up next. So now we're in China with it. 17 countries pick it up the next year, 41 the next year, all never been done. There was nothing to prove before Argentina
that
picked up the pilot that it would work.
Yeah.
We had no data. We had insights.
Yeah.
We had predictive analytics, sort of. But what we really had was what we thought was a good idea for global popular culture at the intersection of beer and something fun to do one night. And they bought into it, they tested it, and they scaled it remarkably. I wish more marketers would do that. Bring us your crazy idea. We will pilot it somewhere, and if it works, we will unlock our global network to you.
And so I think that's a point for any CMO that's out there, right? Whether it's with you guys or whoever their agency is or whatever it is that they're doing, you just got to try stuff and you got to test stuff. And so we're hoping to have more guys like them. I can't actually remember the CMO for Bud is... I don't know
what
you talked
about. Ricardo Marquez in the US. Yeah, Marquez is awesome.
And I think we saw him speak at an event, and I'm sure we sent him an invite. Hopefully, maybe he'll even jump on the season two. But I will tell you, I do have a couple of other great people coming up on season two. I want to make sure I give them at least a little bit of shout out as we start to wrap this up here. Fernando Machado, CMO for Burger King, is going to jump on with us. We're going to go to
also
Miami.
Owned by 3G, which owns AB InBev.
Yeah.
So he'll
awesome.
Be able to speak to that.
I'm super excited about having him. Antonio Nieves is coming in to talk to us. That was an introduction from you, CEO of ModCloth. We're certainly excited. Antonio Nieves. Antonio returns to ModCloth, a digitally native retailer of women's apparel, accessories, and decor as the CEO. First of all, hello and welcome.
Well, thank you for having me here. I'm really excited to be.
You know, for this show, we started our first season last season. Jay was Jay Goodman, who you are friends with, correct?
Yep.
Who convinced you to come on the show at least a little bit?
Twisted the arm just a little bit, not too hard.
Within my lifetime, the ability to really kind of track a consumer and really truly get as close to you can to attribution modeling that consumer to some extent. It really has changed everything. And certainly retail in the clothing industry, to me, maybe almost more than almost anything.
Yeah, you know, I think first it starts back to the core of brand marketing, right, for me. And I learned that at a very early age. I worked at Johnson & Johnson. And when I worked at a company where we were selling Tylenol, you sit there and you think about them as a pharmaceutical business. But in reality, what they are is a marketing business.
Yeah.
They're geniuses at taking a product that really is generic, that you can buy for half the price, but convincing consumers through an emotional connection that it's worth twice as much. And it's a $2.5 billion business. And so then it transforms, and really that piece, doesn't matter what industry you're in, it's all about creating this emotional connection with consumers that allows you to scale these businesses. And you sit there and you look at the fact that I'm college educated. I have a younger sister who's a doctor, finishing up her residency, and we attribute that back to our mother. So when I think about ModCloth and the vision and passion that we have around empowering women and about amplifying their voice, I don't have to look very far. I look to my mother.
It sticks there. It's in your heart.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, it's easy when you sit there and you see the trials. You know, we talk about wage equality. You know, we just did a post this morning around trans people's rights are just as equal as anybody else's. And the fact that we're in a society that we actually have to put those posts today still gives me and my entire company the drive to do what we do. And it's funny because you sit there and you say, well, we sell apparel. But we look at it as not just we sell clothing. We actually believe that we can be a voice for a greater impact, really help, you know, bring equality and true equality.
And then one of my personal favorites, we got a no from her last year. We're getting a yes from her for season two. Jen says she's the CMO for Levi's. We're going to talk to her when we're out in New York, and I'm crazy excited about that. You've said it here, and it's on some other things that some other podcasts and things that I've seen you talk about. The one thing I love about you is the fact that you do always bring it back to brand. It's easy to be kind of figuring out, you don't want to be a spokesperson, right? You're you. And clearly you've got very, you know, precise opinions, as we all do. And you don't shy away from that. There's a beauty in that. But I look at what you've done, and I feel like if others aren't following that lead, they're just missing a chance. There's a risk that's involved with that to some extent, right? But you can't see Jen say speak somewhere and not feel like you haven't left with something, and that passion comes out. How do you continue just to find that every single day? How do you continue to find that passion for the brand?
That's a hard question. I think
I ask once every interview. Maybe there's something hard in there. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't work somewhere for a brand or in a company that didn't share my values. And so you're right, I stand up there, wherever it may be, and you hopefully feel that. I don't want to have to fake it, so I'm not going to go work somewhere, even if it's for way more money or way more title, where I would have to fake it. You know, when I was younger, I felt like I was always failing at something. I wasn't quite all in work, and you hear this from working moms a lot, or I wasn't quite all in mothering because I wasn't there every minute of every day. But you don't have to be every minute of every day. Make the most of the time that you have with them. But it's not just about quality. It is also about quantity. So I'm home for dinner. I'm helping with homework. I'm involved. But yeah, I'm kind of going hard at everything all the time. So balance, I guess where I miss out is sleep, probably.
That's such a great word. I miss it. I so miss it. Well, listen, look how fast that went. That was 30 minutes,
once
man.
Once again, left with more to say.
I know. I know. We appreciate you jumping on with us. We appreciate the hospitality. Hopefully everybody listened through this kind of kickoff to season two. Holly, you said you were going to talk.
No, you were doing such a fine job.
We left you no time at all other than we did such a fine job, she said, Jay.
Experimentation all and right. Collaboration is what I got out of that whole thing in this new culture.
Thank you for that, Holly. Yeah. Next time you sit in this chair or this chair and Sean or I will sit over there.
That only
we would have been better off having heard more from you.
That's it. That's the end of this episode. Thanks for joining us on the CMO Suite.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
We are ridiculously proud that we make a contribution in the name of each of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation will help us provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritious meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategy, specializing in micro-targeted full funnel media strategy for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com.